Hello, good morning, and welcome to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here on a Thursday. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor, we're in our Las Vegas studios. 702-365-9200 is the number to reach us here on Raider Nation Radio. It's both our text line brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center and phones. You can hit us up here all day, every day. And we will also, in about 15 minutes' time, give you the keyword of the day so you can qualify for this week's Summer of Fun Wyoming Adventure. At 7:30, we will talk to Ross Jackson from New Orleans. He's Saints insider with the Locked On Saints podcast and longtime host out there. He will join us at 7:30 as we go around the league and we touch on the NFC South as the Raiders will be playing several teams out of that and pivotal games along the way. How far away and who made the upgrades from last season to this season? We'll talk to Ross Jackson about that. 8:30, we'll do a little four down territory. 9, talking to Case Kiefer from the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. And then we'll also hit on Sam and Ash. It'll be time for a little street legal with Sam and Ash Injury Law. They join us here on Raider Nation Radio at 9:45. And also hit us up on X at RNR 920 AM. All right, well, the Netflix and they keep my subscription around for one more month as Receiver is out now. And it's interesting because you want to get a closer look at some of the receivers that, you know, really make this game shine. And it's like you realize how important as quarterbacks were in last season's docuseries. The wide receivers are right there. And I'm enjoying it how like they kind of pull the curtain back on how some wide receivers and their lifestyles and really just kind of taking a look at, you know, the human part of them. And really at the same time, when they combine it with some of the footage of the games, Justin Jefferson is insane. Davante Adams is just amazing to watch, as we see it all the time. But I like how they're starting to really just kind of go through the whole year that was last year and just start to unravel the story that's within.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, you know, when I was first made aware of this, I had to clarify, this is for the upcoming season or mm-hmm. for last season? And it was for the 2023 season. So everything that you're seeing is going into last year and then watching last year unfold, which we kind of already know how it all unfolded for St. Brown and the Detroit Lions and George Kittle and Debo Samuel and the 49ers and Justin Jefferson and the Vikings and obviously Davante Adams and the Raiders. So we kind of know the ending of their stories, of their yeah. journeys.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's like, how do you tell a story that you already know what the ending is,
right,
and make it interesting, right?
Yeah, and I think what the interesting part is what you said, the lifting of the curtain on each of these players' lives, their daily, you know, process. Their relationships, you know, their marriages or girlfriends or, you know, life off the field, life in the building, getting their reaction in retrospect to things that were unfolding, you know, in real time at the time that they were doing, the filming. So that was kind of cool. I thought it was cool. You know, with Davante Adams and his beautiful family, and it was his daughter's, I think, fourth or fifth birthday. And they had a big party for her at the house here in Las Vegas, and you know, like if anyone that has kids,
yeah,
you understand that one of the things that you probably do is invite the class that they're you know, the school that they're going to. You invite her class,
all
or
their
his
little
class.
Friends,
yeah,
are coming over.
We've been to 1,000 of those,
sure,
things,
and their parents walk in.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Everyone's got a gift and something. You know, everyone's happy to see you,
right? And it's humbling in a way, even doing what we do, Clay. And let alone being somebody like Davante Adams, where, you know, you kind of think that your world is just something that everybody is focused on when it really isn't.
Nah,
and
as
Davante was talking about, like, half the people knew who he was and what he did, and the other half were like, great, you're a football player, great, you know, and which I think is great. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to have that kind of balance, because sometimes we do get caught in this whole thing where, this is it. This is the end all be all. Everybody knows who Davante Adams is. Everybody knows who what the NFL is. And there's a lot of people that don't. They don't care, you know. And they have their own lives and their own interests. And so, you know, seeing that part of it, and I think he got a little bit of a kick out of it, because mm-hmm. you want a little bit of reprieve. You want a little bit of normalcy, even when you are a big star, and you kind of get used to. Whether it's the treatment or the reaction, you know, from fans and you know, just the people that you interact with. But then I think it's healthy to also understand that, you know, there's a lot of people that have no clue who Devontae Adams is or what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. I like that, actually.
Professional athletes have this, you know, kind of like this this life where their work on the court or on the field, it gets, thrown into this stratosphere of like, you are the most important thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, and you think about, you are what you do every day. You're working hard at your craft. You're trying to go in and out of your team. You're winning games. You're practicing a lot. And then if you see the other side of the fans that follow you, which is a lot, you know, they're giving you idolatry. They're giving you, like, they put you on such a high pedestal that, you know, you could see that, you know, there's a real difference between, you know, maybe what a fan could be and what a fan will say to you than what the parents of your children will say, your children's friends will say to you. And some of them were coming into Devontae's house, you know, just like, oh, hey, it's just another birthday party that our kids
exactly.
go to.
Yeah.
And then there was a couple where this one mother, she was like holding her chest. You know, as she walked in, she was like, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a beautiful home.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
The house and the way the party was. I don't know if she even knew who Devontae Adams was necessarily.
I don't know, but it was all like sinking in on her. But, you know, sometimes when you roll up to somebody's neighborhood, you have a pretty good idea that the house is going to look pretty awesome.
Right, exactly. And in that neighborhood, in that area, there's a lot of money. You know, there's a lot of money here in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a professional sports star to have a massive home. You know, up where I live, I'm in Seven Hills over in Henderson. There's all sorts of just great neighborhoods that have just unbelievable homes, you know, up there on the golf courses. Mm-hmm. And there's not a whole lot of them that are professional athletes. They're working in the casino, they're executives, or whatever it is that they do. And they've made a nice living for themselves.
Oh, yeah,
so.
And I think because of the service industry, people run across a lot of celebrities, athletes,
yeah.
And it's part of their job to see them as just regular people, or in certain cases, a little bit more special. But at the same time, they know how to handle themselves in the situations where
yeah.
they're not like falling over themselves and, you know, and coming down to one knee and thanking God.
I always, it's you know, I got caught in, it was really the story of my career, and that was the NFL potentially moving back to Los Angeles, right? And it was a huge story, and it was a roller coaster ride. I'm not going to get into all the details, but it was just, it was so emotional for a lot of different people, you know, hardcore fan bases of the St. Louis Rams, the Oakland Raiders, the LA Raiders, the Chargers. You know, it was a volatile story, and it was a good 14 months or so of just, you know, grinding it out, and that was like the focal point of my life at that particular time. And after it was all said and done, you know, living that, and it was quite the experience. After, you know, I wanted to thank my wife. So I wanted to go buy her a new car, right? And so we were at a dealership in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And ironically, we ended up buying two cars that day, one for her, one for myself. But as I'm sitting in the room, it went to finance, and those guys were crunching all the numbers. And I'm sitting there with the car dealer, the salesman, and he's probably about 35 years old or so,
okay.
right? And
yeah.
so we're shooting the you-know-what. And he's like, so you're a sports writer. Yeah, you know, and he was, so what's the hot story right now, you know? And and so I told him, I go, well, you know, actually, that's kind of the reason why I'm here. You know, I'm sort of thanking my wife for putting up with me the last, you know, 15, 16 months over this crazy story. You know, the Rams had moved to St. Louis, you know, and now they came back and they were just granted, you know, permission to come back to Los Angeles. The Chargers, you know, I explained to him the whole story. He's like, oh, wow, that's totally cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a great story. And then about 30 seconds passes with just total silence. And this dude looks at me and goes, so wait a minute, the Rams moved to St. Louis? You know, so it was a totally humbling experience.
Yeah.
Like, you know, here I thought that everybody was following the story and everybody
yes.
knew all the details and everybody knew. Yes, the Rams, 20 years ago, the Rams moved from L.A. to St. Louis, and now they're coming back, and everyone's all happy. And it just, it dawned on me that there's probably about a smaller percentage of people that actually care about that
mm-hmm.
than the larger percentage of people. He's probably some surfer. You know, he had a big surfboard in his room, and football was probably just like some thing that he, you know, he hears about and maybe pays peripheral attention to, but it wasn't a live or die, you know, day in, day out type of a thing. And it actually made me feel good, because as much self-importance as we sometimes put on what it is that we do, you know, and that can go for any industry, I think every once in a while it's healthy to get humbled into thinking there's a whole bunch of people that don't give us rats you know what about any of this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know,
wait, the Rams moved to St. Louis?
Oh, my God. That's so great. Like,
yeah. Yeah, dude. Yeah. 20 years ago.
It's hilarious because it's like, are they still here, the football team?
I didn't even know. I put on the TV and they would still be on there. So they were playing in St. Louis that whole time? Yes.
Oh, man. I tell you what, as a single dad, you know, you go out and on the dating scene and when you're asked what you do, you tell them, oh, well, you're in radio. And they're like, oh, okay. What channel? Like, you know, you play music. Like, no, I'm in sports talk.
Right.
And that's when you start to realize that this person has never listened to sports talk, has zero interest in listening to sports talk.
Yeah,
and it's like AM radio. You can realize, like, you got to be careful when you just start to feather, because you think you're getting a cool job, you know?
Right.
And you want to talk about her and be, you know, kind of have some self-worth with that job, but you're talking to somebody that will never listen and has zero interest in it. And it's also just as a reminder of, like, there's a whole nother world out there.
Exactly.
That is a reality. You know, one thing I liked about this, we're talking about the Netflix docuseries called Receiver. Davante Adams is among it with Justin Jefferson, as well as Travis Kelce et al. And it's like, one of the funny parts is they kind of go through the chronology of the season. There was a moment where, you know, both Davante and Max, it was approaching week three against the Steelers.
Oh, wearing the same outfit?
Wearing the same outfit. I just want to play this little cut. And we encourage you to go get it and listen to it, because this is really, you feel like something good's going to happen out of this whole story, to learn more about Davante. And everything you start to learn about Davante, you start to like. And this was that moment in time where, you know, he and Max realize how close they really are in nature.
Davante, that's my twin. We're just on the same wavelength. We understand each other since day one. I mean, the first conversation we had, it was like I knew him for years.
Every principle that I have is the same as y'all, basically.
Hands off the line, you're swiping.
Hands, like, that's what y'all are doing with y'all hands is just release work for me. You know what I'm saying?
Max Crosby is my twin at this point. Like, we have to be. I don't care if skin color is different. I don't care, because for the Steelers game, show up and I had this fit ready to go. I thought I was going to be freshest one in the room, and I was tied for first, unfortunately, because Max Crosby decided to show up wearing the exact same Louis set that I wore to the game. I'm like, this is not real. We're wearing the same exact outfit on game day. Happened more than once, which is insane.
The Louis Vuitton outfit. Did you and Max have the same one on?
I know.
Did you plan it?
No, we did not. And we did it last year with the Alexander McQueen outfit. We both didn't plan that one either.
You guys just are on the same wavelength?
Same wavelength, baby. Got it.
That's Melissa Stark at the end. That's great, because it starts out with, like, you know what? Devontae's my twin. That's what Max says. And then, like, same letter, like, yeah, Max is my twin, and they dress the same.
You know how hard it is to show up to the same exact game with the same and it wasn't like this was something that you can go to.
No, they're not going to Target to buy off the rack.
Yeah, like, this was a special cut, special fit. That each of them thought that there's no way that anyone else on the team is going to have this, and let alone wear it the same exact day, the same exact game. And we all see the footage of guys walking in, and we're seeing that now with the WNBA. I'd love to see all the great women, you know, showing up in style over at the WNBA. It's become a thing, just as it is in the NBA and the NFL. And to show up on the same game with the same exact unique, it was a very unique outfit. I remember that day thinking, wait a minute, there has to have been some sort of a plan here. And then both of them were like, no, there was no plan. It was just a totally random coincidence. And so there was something in that little wavelength that they have that connected them that day.
I thought they were doing like a pregame photo shoot for something. Louis Vuitton or something like that.
Yeah.
But the fact that they said it happened the year before.
Right.
That they wore the same outfit.
Right.
And it's good, because you can see how this is going to play out, how Davante on the offense and Max on the defense are leaders and captains in ways. And it's like that they all are completely on the same page. They approach life the same way. They approach the game the same way. And I think that that bodes well for kind of seeing what the chemistry is of this team. And you can see how they'll back each other up when the going gets tough by the middle of the season. And I've only watched the first episode of Davante so far. So as it goes on, we'll try to bring you little snippets here and there. But we encourage you to watch it over on Netflix.
I got a question for you. Do you think baseball produces superstars anymore?
No, I do not.
You know, our he's a colleague, I guess, Brandon Thierney in WFAN.
Yeah, I know Brandon.
Right, and he's on this whole thing that Francisco Lindor is not a superstar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he doubled down on this with a tweet where he said, "Love the move for minute one. I react to how players perform. Lindor has been amazing the past month. Indisputable. But he's paid like a superstar, and he has not been the same player in New York that he was in Cleveland, and that is statistically irrefutable." Well, the fact of the matter is, no, he's actually the same exact player that he was in Cleveland, and he's on par to go to the Hall of Fame, and he's been one of the best players in baseball since he got to New York, just as he was in Cleveland. And I wonder if, in this case, is it a superstar? I don't know, because baseball it's not producing like mega stars the way it used to.
That's how I would look at it.
But statistically, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's on par for a Hall of Fame. He's the sixth leading home run hitter among shortstops all time, and he's still got a long way to go. He's one of the top 12 players every single year in Major League Baseball. So I'm wondering, like, what does constitute superstar, first of all, and secondly, if you're going to say something like that, where it's irrefutable, you better do your research, because he's getting roasted on Twitter by people that actually understand baseball.
Well, and Brandon understands baseball.
I don't know, because he didn't do his research on that one.
No, his job is also to cultivate opinion and to get people to talk about things.
Opinion is one thing, but when you say it's irrefutable that he's not the same player, you're not looking. The statistics show that he is exactly the same player, and I think that I don't know how old he is. But it is easy for people of our age and our era to just look at things emotionally and, like I doubt very seriously he watched day in and day out Francisco Lindor in Cleveland. And when you watch baseball, there's ups and downs. There's periods of time where you're going to look silly, and we all know that. It's different when you watch a player day in and day out compared to just look at the stats of when he was in Cleveland. Because that's what I'm saying is that if you're going to make that kind of, it's not an opinion. He's trying to sell it as fact. Opinion is one thing.
No.
Like, you could say, hey, I don't think that he's the same player. But when you say he's not the same player and is irrefutable, and then everyone that's responded who understands baseball, in a different way than maybe we looked at it in the past, they're going, dude, he is exactly the same player.
Well, okay. All right. Well, here's the thing. Like, a superstar to me, if it would come out of baseball, for example, would be somebody that if you went to that dealership that when you went there with your wife,
right.
That guy that was working on your papers, he would know who Francisco Lindor is.
Right.
That means it's transcendent. It is on people's mind. It is like crossing all sports, doing commercials, things like that. That's a superstar. Those are there's only like maybe a handful of guys like that in Major League Baseball at all.
Is there? I don't even know if there is anymore.
Maybe,
that's my question.
Maybe Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, and even then you're starting to be like, you would have to look for the big cities,
right.
Because you would have to look for somebody like Shohei Ohtani.
I think maybe
so it's like five or less,
Yeah.
And then it's tough. But,
Brandon
is saying is that, I've worked with Brandon for many years at Sports Fan
Network. Worth the money. That's been his big argument. I've been following this. I'm like,
okay. Yes. He's worth a lot of money, but at the same time, are you getting your return on investment? And maybe it's all relative. But for Brandon, he's not trying to make it a fact. He's doing his job to get people to talk about baseball.
That's my point.
And that's
though.
The hardest thing to do, to get people to actually go and get on one side of the fence or not on a sport that doesn't have superstars.
I agree.
And he's got to go and find a way to do it. We've talked about how Bill Plaschke will go on one side and say something like, this is irrefutable, no other opinion matters. And that gets people to go and react.
I get what you're saying, Clay, but that's not how it was framed. He framed it as, this is fact. And it's irrefutable that he's not the same. And it was like, well, yes, he is, actually. So if your opinion is like, I just don't feel like that's the same guy and the Mets are getting, what they paid for, that's an opinion. And I'm completely fine with that. But to go out there in today's world where all the numbers are right there for you, you know what I'm saying? Like to talk out of your ear like that is it's just funny to me, because I'm like, everything is right there for any. And his mistake is thinking that you could just get away with that nowadays by saying that and not knowing that people are going to be, dude, and calling you out for it, because all you got to do is look at the go to his baseball reference page, look at the numbers, because they're all there and they all explain something that's completely contradictory to what you're saying.
Well, you're assuming that Brandon doesn't know that, because I know Brandon very well and he's a huge baseball fan. He's somebody well, that is then, using it, that is trying to spark a discussion.
All right, so he's playing loose with the facts to get engagement.
I don't think he's playing loose with the facts. I think he's just staying firm in his opinion.
I'm with you on opinion. He's making it a fact. That's not fact and opinion are two distinctly different things. and he opened himself up for, okay, if that's what you think, I got a question. And everyone, on Twitter is saying that, including me, is like, do you really think that? If you really think that, then you have to question your baseball knowledge. You have to question his baseball knowledge when the numbers say that that's not even like irrefutable. Do you understand what the word irrefutable means? It's you can't argue it. You can't argue it, Clay. But the numbers say
case in point
wrong.
Of why he did it, so he could get somebody to get on the other side, because you have to build a market for this thing.
Okay, so then you're saying he did it by design to just get engagement. He doesn't necessarily feel that way. He's doing it just to create some sort of controversy and talking point, which I'm fine with.
I think there's both. Especially he's been a host in the number one market for now almost 15 years now.
When do you ever say, you know what, maybe I just misread that one? And do we have a responsibility sometimes to do that, Clay? Honestly.
Brandon's from Brooklyn. I don't know if you ever get guys from Brooklyn to
Isn't
come
that
back.
Isn't ridiculous when you think about that? I'll say this about Bill Plaschke. He'll always write the column, I completely miss that. I totally miss that. And I've seen those columns where he not corrects himself, but saying, hey, I swung a miss on that one.
But Brandon would also be like, prove me wrong.
Okay. That's
his style, That's how he makes his money. That's his meter.
Will he ever admit it though? You think he ever truly admits it? Or
of course he does. Yes, of course he does.
We'll see him on this one, because he was completely off base on this one.
Because when you leave yourself out there like that, you can't be the one and only guy, out on the edge of the cliff.
We'll find out because I'm going to be following this, and I'm with him though. He isn't a superstar, but then you can't hold that against Francisco Lindor, because there really aren't superstars like Pete Rose and guys that when we grew up that were synonymous names that we all knew. Basically, we think there were a whole population that didn't even care. But baseball players were superstars back then. They were on commercials. They were indelible names in our childhood and our upbringing. I don't know that that's the case anymore. So
no, it's not, and it's too bad, because baseball is taking for granted its ability to make the most out of the national TV exposure it has, and that's not going to last forever. And it starts to really start to set in that Major League Baseball as a whole, in many cases, is a very poorly run corporation that doesn't take care of what the long-term gains could be. Case in point, looking at Southern Nevada, how many teams are blacked out in this area. This is an area that has brought MVPs from Chris Bryant to Bryce Harper, rookies of the year, and yet you still can't see the Dodgers or five or six other teams in your region.
DirecTV.
You still can't grow your sport in a city that produces Major League Baseball talent.
And I've talked to people in baseball, it's like out of their hands for some reason.
Yeah, it belongs to nobody. No one has responsibility for it.
It's like a TV thing that they're trying to get fixed, and I'm with you, man. You have to get that fixed, but we'll see if Brandon Turney says, you know what, actually he is the same player that he was in Cleveland. And that's irrefutable.
That's irrefutable.
It is irrefutable.
It's irrefutable if you'll ever get a straight answer and definitive answer out of Brandon. But I know the guy for a long, long time, and I've worked with him at Sports Fan Network. And we have a real mutual respect and admiration for what he does.
Let's get him on the show then.
Yeah, BT. I think BT, I wonder what his hours are right now, but maybe we'll try that, because I know at certain times of the day he's not available, but we'll see if we can get him on here. And he can refute to you here the facts versus opinion.
Just look at the numbers, dude.
Ross Jackson joins us next. As we go around the league, we're taking a look at the NFC South, teams who have upgraded and who have not. Well, that's kind of important, especially for the Raiders' schedule. And the Saints loom large at the end of the year. Let's talk to Ross Jackson. He comes up next here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor here with you on R&R 920. Don't forget, the keyword of the day is free. Text the word free, F-R-E-E-E, to 702-365-9200. You qualify for this week's Summer of Fun Adventure to Wyoming. Get on that ranch at the Rockin' M. Text the word free, F-R-E-E, here on Raider Nation Radio. Hey, as we go around the league and we take a look at the NFC South and many of the teams that are on the Raiders' schedule, very intriguing division. And we wanted to get in touch with Ross Jackson, the senior writer with the Saints News Network, the popular host of Locked On Saints as well as Locked On NFL, to give us kind of like an inside look at not only that division but also the Saints as a whole, because there's a pivotal game for the Raiders and Saints at the end of this season. And we're really happy to have you, Ross. Thank you so much for being with us here. How do you feel so far that, you know, when you look at what the training camp will be for the Saints, what are your biggest questions going into this year? Because there's been a lot of additions and deletions, and we want to know, like, did the Saints in your mind, Ross, make that upgrade from last year to this year?
Yeah, no, great question. Thanks so much for having me on. I think the biggest thing that I'm looking at in terms of where the Saints made their biggest upgrades, I don't really know if they upgraded the roster very much, but I don't know that they necessarily needed to. Okay. A lot of the kind of narrative last year was that the Saints offensive system didn't elevate the talent that it had, right? Like, that was always kind of the narrative around where the Saints offense was last year, in particular when it came to, you know, looking at where the team is. So I think where they made their biggest upgrade was by upgrading on their offensive coaching staff. I think that's where they made their biggest moves this offseason. And those are the moves that will ideally, at least what they're hoping for here, that will lead the biggest sort of rate of improvement for this team going from 2023 into 2024. So I would look at the coaching staff, bringing in Clint Kubiak as their new offensive coordinator, upgrading some of their position coaches, things like that. I would look at that as being the place where they upgraded the most. And, of course, where a lot of the biggest question marks are going to come over the course of training camp is really going to be tied to what is the Saints' new offensive system look like, and how does it complement your old friend over there, Derek Carr?
When I look at the Saints, a phrase comes to mind, stuck in the middle again. This is a team last year, if you look at their DVOA rankings, they were 15th overall. That was 17th on offense, 15th on defense, 14th on special teams. They won one game against a 23 playoff team. That was a late season 9-8 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They didn't lose to any teams that had 10 or more losses. They beat the teams they were expected to beat. They didn't beat anybody above their fight class. And as you mentioned, they didn't necessarily do anything to bolster the roster. There were some coaching changes. I know, based on past history, Derek Carr typically struggles in the first year in a new offense. So he's going into another year of new offense there with the Saints after integrating himself last season. So looking at all those things, is there an expectation that they're going to be able to climb out of that middle world enough to maybe win enough games to go to the playoffs?
Yeah, that's certainly the expectation. Will it be the reality is going to be a whole other question. But the expectation for this team is that they get back to the playoffs and they finally end that long multi-year playoff drought now. This is going to be Derek Carr's seventh offensive play caller change in his career. Wow. Of course, having Greg Olsen twice in the midst of that conversation would make it eight in total, but seventh different guy. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, every time that he has gone into a new system, as most quarterbacks, he struggled quite a bit. And so I think the hope is that this new offense implements enough easy buttons to put him in position to be able to improve, and then thereby the team improve and win a couple of extra games to be able to get themselves into the playoffs. The thing that's been really frustrating for this team is that they haven't been a 5-win team, a 6-win team, a 7-win team that has missed the playoffs by a mile. They've typically been waiting for someone else to win them into the playoffs at the end of the year, and then you can always look back to one week three, week 7, week 12 loss earlier on in the season and go, man, if the Saints would have won that game, then all of a sudden they'd be in the playoffs. So what they're trying to, the leap that they're trying to make in their minds is a boundable leap. It's not a leap trying to go from, you know, a 2-win team to a playoff team. They're trying to win one more game. They're trying to get back into double digits and they're trying to get into the playoffs. I think that's why their expectation is that is an attainable goal for them. I think that the leap might be a little bit tougher because as you try to improve, everyone else in the NFL is trying to improve as well. So the bound isn't consistent from year to year. But I think that's the way that they're viewing it is, can they get to a point where they are able to win that extra game, get themselves into the playoffs, and certainly uphold that expectation of improvement going into 2024.
It's Ross Jackson here with us from New Orleans, senior writer with Saints News Network and the host of Locked On Saints. Here was on the morning tailgate. The one thing that stood out to me was just the offensive line looks strangely patchwork, where that was always a point of consistency for so many years. Is that a concern for you? The guys that are there to block for Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, and allow this offense to really start to go?
Yeah, probably the biggest concern going into the season is the trenches as a whole. So offensive and defensive trenches for sure. And that's not typically a place that a competing NFL team wants to have their question marks, right? Like that's where they want to be set, solid, sold. As they say, the game is won in the trenches. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting this year, the Saints have kind of flipped their philosophy. In the past, they've continued to reinvest in the veterans that they've already had in their system and rely on youth as their depth. This year, they're relying on youth to push their improvement, right? You've got a new fresh starting tackle at Taliese Fuaga, who was drafted in the first round this past year. Trevor Penning, who struggled early in his career, might be moving to the other side of the offensive line. He's still a young player and could be looked at as an even younger player having to potentially play a brand new position. And then with Nick Saldiveri potentially plugging in at left guard, he's a second-year guy that they drafted in the fourth round last year. And so they're really relying on their offensive line's youth to push their improvement. It's not that it's impossible. It's just a really big question mark. It's a lot of unknowns in terms of three-fifths of their offensive line at this point. And it's not typically an ideal circumstance for a team that's looking to compete going into the football season. But obviously they have a lot of faith in these young guys. And they really like the athleticism that they all bring, which is going to be core to this new offensive system.
I want to go back to Derek Carr for a second because it was a stark contrast difference for him last year compared to the situation that he faced here with the Raiders. It was typical for everyone to view Derek Carr as a constant here with the Raiders, stability. And the whole thing was you got to improve around Derek Carr. It's not Derek Carr's fault. You have to improve the offensive line. You have to improve the defense. You have to improve the coaching, whatever the case might be. And once you do that, everything will work out. It never quite did work out. Whereas with the Saints, he kind of went to a situation last year where he was the final answer. He was supposed to be the final answer, a quarterback on a good team in the Saints, and he was going to be the difference maker. And I want to ask you, that's something that he was never in that position with the Raiders, but he certainly was with the Saints, and that brings some pressure that he was going to be the final piece. How do you feel like he handled that? And do you think it was accurate to kind of describe it as that?
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely looked at him as adding the last piece, right? They wanted to add the quarterback and be able to, go on this playoff run with Michael Thomas and a young Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed and Alvin Kamara and bring all these guys together, kind of, work with the players and the playmakers that they knew, and then add him to that as kind of the final piece of the recipe, if you will. And because of that, I think that it was a very, very different situation than what Derek Carr is used to. And it's funny because it's almost like now, just a year later, he's kind of back into that other part of the conversation where he was with the Raiders of, well, they got to make sure that they have the offensive line to protect him. Look how good he was at the end of the season and things like that. So it very quickly flipped back to maybe a situation that he feels more comfortable with because it's something that he's a little bit more familiar with. But yeah, he was absolutely looked at going into 2023 with his addition as kind of that final piece. They had the defense. They had this receiver core they were really excited about. They have the playmaking running back. They had the offensive line that they liked. It was really just about getting the right quarterback. And so for head coach Dennis Allen, who of course drafted Derek Carr back in Oakland, it was really all about going to get his guy. Derek Carr was his guy, but unfortunately, as they added Derek Carr, it was a little bit of growing pains, right? It took about 12 games for everybody kind of get their legs up under them with the system, Derek Carr included. And then, of course, you saw a lot of the struggles in the offensive line, miscommunication with some of the receivers, things like that, shouting matches with players. It just didn't turn out to be the ideal situation of a plug-and-play situation for a quarterback. Turns out they actually needed more than they realized they needed over on that side of the ball.
Do you anticipate, from what you've been able to observe through OTAs and minicamp, that Spencer Rattler might provide a threat early in the preseason?
Not for the starting role. I think for Spencer Rattler, the kind of jostling for position is going to be, is he going to be the number two guy behind Derek Carr? Derek Carr is the starter. There's really no question about that. I wouldn't look at Spencer Rattler, even though, he was the first quarterback outside of all of those top, you know, quarterbacks that were drafted that was selected and all those other things. I get the excitement around him for some of his fans and things like that, but Derek Carr is sitting very, very comfortably in the starting role here in New Orleans.
Yeah, and I think he's making over $40 million, so just follow the money in that situation. It's a winnable division, and I think that's what made this so disappointing last year for the Saints. When you look at you know, what's around them with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, an okay team, not a great team, and certainly the Atlanta Falcons and the Carolina Panthers were just not very good football teams. It looks like the Falcons may have improved, and a lot of that's going to be predicated on Kirk Cousins. I think the Carolina Panthers are still a team that, you know, is trying to get there, and they're on a completely different journey. But based on what the Falcons did, bringing in Kirk Cousins, the Buccaneers coming back with Baker Mayfield, where do you feel like the Saints kind of fit into this whole NFC South?
Yeah, I mean, I think the logical place to put them is jostling for that number two position in the division, with Tampa still probably being the favorite. Tampa's just going to have a lot of, you know, consistency, continuity, things that the NFL really values at this level. But sometimes, you know, you have to also look at that as, okay, well, they're a year older, and so what does that really mean in terms of their ability to produce and things like that? So, you know, you can maybe make either argument either way. But look, they're the division champs, so they should be coming in as the guys at the top of this division right away. But it could be proven very quickly that Atlanta belongs to the top of that conversation, depending upon how things go, mm-hmm. how quickly Kirk Cousins gets acclimated with the system, how quickly Zach Robinson is able to kind of take that McVay system and make it work over in Atlanta. You know, how quickly they're able to figure out, okay, how do we use Bijan Robinson? Because for whatever reason, they didn't figure that out last year. But again, new coaching staff, new quarterback, a lot of new for Atlanta, while Tampa's coming in with a lot of consistency and a lot of continuity. So I think that the NFL would value that consistency and continuity over anything else. And the Saints have their own kind of version of new. Saints kind of did what the Atlanta Falcons did, but they didn't do it all in one year. Last year, they changed out the quarterback, they swapped out the roster, made some big moves there, and then this offseason, then they flipped over the coaching staff. Atlanta kind of did it all in one season. Could be a better approach, could be a harder approach, we'll have to see. But I would say New Orleans right now is comfortably jostling for number two, with a chance to be able to overtake number one if Atlanta stumbles and if Tampa regresses.
That's interesting, Ross, because I was wondering, like, can you find the same sort of gradient of progression for a team like Carolina, as, you know, even like Tampa Bay was projected to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. It didn't happen that way, and now Dave Canales is over there in Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's certainly a chance there. I think the biggest thing is, do you have the right quarterback in Carolina? And look, that was part of the question that we were asking about Tampa, too, with going out and getting Baker Mayfield. The kind of assumption was, okay, well, this is a salary cap reset year. You know, they just signed the guy to the team contract, but then they ended up being the playoff team. The biggest thing is going to be, like, is Bryce Young the right guy? I'm not so sure he is. I think Carolina made a mistake going for him instead of CJ Stroud at the top of the draft. They don't necessarily have all of the weapons, although adding a guy like Xavier Leggett definitely goes a long way. But I think they've got a couple more years to go. But who knows? Maybe they could surprise sooner rather than later, like Tampa did last year.
All right, so the Raiders visit New Orleans late in December, just before New Year's. Where do you feel like the Saints are going to be when the Raiders come rolling into town?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because I know health is going to play a huge factor in terms of what this game ends up looking like so late in the season. But look, I think if nothing else, the Saints should be in a situation where at least they have a grasp of their new offensive system. It took them 12 games last year. Ideally for them, it doesn't take as long this year. But in any case, that late in the season, they should be in that area. The other part that you're going to be wanting to watch is, and this is what gave the Raiders so much trouble the last time they came here to New Orleans, is what does the defense look like this year, right? And another year older, guys like Cam Jordan, Demario Davis, Tyrann Mathieu, all a year older, all the tumultuous situation going on with shutdown corner on the outside, Marshawn Lattimore this offseason. Where does this defense, how quickly does this defense get its legs under it as well? Because that's kind of the lifeblood of this team. So I think, you know, the early portions of the season, the health of the season and everything is going to be such a huge factor for that game that it's hard to project at this point. But if nothing else, both of these teams should be very comfortable in their newness by the time that they meet up here in New Orleans.
Make sure you follow Ross on X at Ross Jackson NOLA, NOLA. Ross, you do such a great job for so many years with Saints News Network as well as Locked On. We really appreciate the time you've given us today. Thanks again for doing so.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Y'all take care. Stay safe. Look forward to talking to you again here soon.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you down in the Big Easy. Ross Jackson here with us from New Orleans. That's a fantastic, very erudite analysis, especially when you think about what the offense could be for Derek Carr by late December. If everything is working in the way it needs to be, this could be like, you know, maybe a little bit of a dangerous you know, team that you think about late in the season. And if they still have the continuity of everything else, but playing and they got meaningful games, and you know, Greg Olsen and Derek Carr working together with Dennis Allen, you know, his seventh OC in all these years, maybe this is that spot where it's like, all right, maybe they can put it all together. But I wonder, as he said, that defense, what will it look like as another year older?
Don't you feel like we've had this conversation about Derek Carr so many times? Maybe this is the one. Maybe they could put it all together. How many times have we had that conversation with Derek Carr?
I've lost track after 50.
Right?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's kind of the same story almost every year, wherever now, you know, kind of the same thing happened in New Orleans. He was a okay quarterback. I think he was 16th in quarterback ranking last year. And
where he usually kind of is, you know, right? Yeah. In the average.
Yeah. Right, stuck in the middle.
Yeah. But this is a winnable division, though. It's like, you could still find a way to win that division.
No doubt, no doubt. But, you know, when I hear what our guest was talking about, you're getting that one extra win to get to the playoffs. Okay, and what does that mean necessarily? I mean, are you a dangerous team in the playoffs, or are you just getting to the playoffs and, you know, kind of being, not that you're mm-hmm. just satisfied with that, but... He didn't say anything about...
They're stuck in the middle again.
About, you know, and then advancing and getting to the mm-hmm. NFC Championship game and perhaps knocking on the door of the Super Bowl. There was no talk of that. It was just, can they get that extra win to go to the playoffs? I mean, in a lot of ways, that's where the Raiders are right now. But at the same time, the Raiders have, to me, a couple of quarterbacks that they really don't have much of an idea about just yet in terms of... You know, how good they can be, whereas Derek Carr's been at this thing for a long time now. And we're still talking about maybe if it could all work together to get that extra win to get to the playoffs and something always ends up happening and it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. And it never all shoulders, and he doesn't shoulder all the blame for it. It's like, always disseminated around. It was other things that didn't happen.
Right.
That didn't make this team. And Derek is still doing his job. And how long can you build on that?
I don't think that you can. You know, and I think that he falls into that category of throwing good money at stuck in the middle again. And I know, you know, for the Saints, the alternative would be just a great unknown Spencer Rattler. What do we really know about Spencer Rattler right now? You know, he was picked where he was picked, and, you know, maybe he does have a bright future. I hope the best, you know, for him, but, you know, that's the alternative right now. And what Derek does bring is better than the immediate alternative, but that doesn't say much necessarily. That doesn't get you where you want to get to, and that's sort of a pet peeve of mine in the NFL, especially when you find that middle range kind of a quarterback and justifying the expenditure for that quarterback because you're afraid of what the alternative might be, when at the end of the day, neither the alternative, you know, in an immediate basis, mm-hmm. or the guy you do actually have in a Derek Carr is really going to get you where you want to get to, unless you want to just maybe knock on the door 10 wins and get to a playoff and be kind of happy with that.
Yeah, and at the same time, did you draft a guy that was going to be, you know, trying to fight for a backup spot, or are you really getting somebody that could be a successor down the road?
That could be. That's definitely, I think, what they hope.
That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
So, knowing how Dennis Allen approaches the preseason, that he's going to rest starters. He doesn't want to play too many starters during the preseason. And that just always allows a rookie quarterback mm-hmm. to kind of come in there and build a lot of hype and
right.
build a lot of desire for, like, oh, what could the offense look like? And so if you come out of the gate kind of slow, then everyone's going to be thinking about a change at quarterback. And especially for a guy like Dennis Allen, who's also trying to, you know, kind of fight for his life as head coach and remain there in New Orleans.
Yeah, if Spencer Rattler is, you know, to me, Dennis Allen won't even be around when Spencer Rattler presumably becomes the starter in mm-hmm. a couple of years. Because if that is the case, then the Derek Carr experiment didn't pay the dividends that the Saints were hoping for, and he's probably going to pay the ultimate price for that. They'll find a different leader and a different head coach and move on their merry way. It's just there's certain players in this league that, you know, in contrast, Kirk Cousins, his first year in Minnesota, That's why I like the Falcons, because he's going to an offense that he knows like the back of his hand. The Zach Robinson offense that he's bringing with Sean McVay. Sean McVay was Kirk Cousins' coach in Washington.
It's a good mix.
Right, it's a great mix. Mm-hmm. And there's talent around him. It's not like he's going to a completely bare... This Falcons offense looks a lot like what the Raiders, what the Vikings had when Kirk Cousins, and he put together a spectacular year that first year in Minnesota. 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, completed 70% of his passes, well over 4,000 yards in throwing. So he had a really good first year in Minnesota. So he's shown that he can transition to a new offense and flourish, and now he's going to an offense that he knows really well. So I like the Falcons' chances if Kirk Cousins is healthy, and that's the biggest question, I guess, for him.
All right, we'll continue to go around the NFC South as they stand. A lot of teams stand in the Raiders' position early in the season and late in the season. Has this defense and offense in the NFC South, both between Tampa, Carolina, the Saints, and Atlanta, and Orleans, have they upgraded? We'll get into more of that as well. We'll also do four down territory. And don't forget, text the word free, F-R-E-E-E, to 702-365-9200. That's your keyword of the day for the summer of fun, brought to you by Planet Nissan.